5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
My wife has a twin sister. They aren't identical twins, just fraternal. But they still look very much alike. If you didn't know them well, you could easily mistake one for the other from a distance. Carrie and I have been married for 6 years. Her sister, Amber, just got married about 6 months ago to a guy named Steve. He seemed like a nice enough guy at first. A little aloof, maybe, but nice enough. The more I've been around him, though, the clearer it has become to me that he's not the type of guy I'd choose to hang out with. Since my wife and her sister are close, though, and since we all live in the same little Colorado town, I don't really have a choice, but we seem to see each other regularly. It sounds like I'm getting ready to complain, but I'm not. There are definitely worse things than having to hang out with Amber and Steve. I've always enjoyed Amber's company. She's a lot like Carrie, after all. And Steve isn't unpleasant, necessarily, just a little peculiar. Still, I was disappointed to learn that Steve wanted to take me up to his hunting lease for the weekend. To tell the truth, I don't think it was Steve's idea. I think Carrie and Amber came up with it so the two of them could have the weekend to themselves, to go shopping or whatever else it was they wanted to do regularly. I think Carrie was also hoping Steve and I would bond better. She knew we really didn't click, and it would make our gatherings better all around if we could find a way to connect. Never mind if I didn't hunt anymore. I don't even own a gun. But there was no way I could have said no. For the sake of everyone involved, I was going to spend the weekend up in the mountains in a little rustic cabin with Steve. With Carrie's encouragement, I got my mind right, and that Friday afternoon, Steve and I headed up a mountain and into the wilderness. As usual, our conversation on the way up was stilted. When we got to the cabin, which appeared to be pretty sturdy, there be it far from civilization, Steve headed inside without really giving me any direction about where to go or what to do. So I just hung out on the front porch. He came back out a minute or so later, carrying two rifles, and said something about needing to make sure if they were sighted correctly. I went in to use the restroom, and when I came back out, he was sitting in a rocking chair there on the porch. I sat in another, and we had the first of what we proved to be a recurring themed conversation. He said to me, "So, did you ever date Amber before you and Carrie got together?" What an odd thought to ask out of the blue, I thought. No, I met Carrie first. I didn't meet Amber until after. He sort of grunted, staring off into the forest, and then he asked, "What about after? Did you date her after?" I never dated Amber. She's my wife's sister. He grunted again, still staring into the wilderness. Finally, he suggested that we get a move on, because it got dark in a hurry in the mountains. There was a split rail fence about 30 yards from the cabin, and there was a traditional bullseye target fastened to one of those posts. He asked me to go check that the target was secured tightly, so I did. Just as I touched the target, though, there came a booming crack from behind me, a rifle shot, and simultaneously splinters flew from one of the rails not 3 feet from where I was standing. It scared the living hell out of me, and I flinched so hard I almost fell down. I whirled around and glared back at the cabin, at Steve. He was just standing there, with one of his rifles resting on his shoulder, laughing. "What the fuck are you doing?" I screamed, Relax, he chuckled. Just joking. I sighted the guns last weekend. Shooting at me isn't a joke. It's damn reckless. He sort of rolled his eyes. I apologize. I didn't mean to make you upset. Just trying to have a little fun. Being a little off was one thing. Firing a high-powered rifle in the vicinity of somebody was something entirely else. I had just about decided to demand that he take me home by the time I'd made it back to the cabin, but then I started thinking about the girls. This was going to be hard to explain, and it wasn't going to do anything for the bonding thing Carrie had hoped for. Still, bonding or not, it wasn't worth getting shot at. I found him standing next to the sink, preparing to wash dishes. I marched over to him, still not quite sure what I was going to say, but he beat me to it.
I really am sorry, he said. I'm an expert shot. No way you were in danger. But I get that you couldn't have known that.
I understand. I shouldn't have done that. You scared the shit out of me.
I know.
He rinsed a pot under the faucet and set it in the drying rack.
I just felt that we were a little tense. We're not the best of friends, and our wives sort of forced this on us. I was just trying to loosen things up.
Yeah, well, I could feel my resolve breaking. Before I knew it, my hand had found its way to his shoulder and patted it. It loosened my bowels. He laughed.
You should have seen your face.
That's how it went for the next little while. Friendly and jovial. We worked together on dinner. Steaks and potatoes, nice and manly. And then he made a fire in the fireplace. I grabbed us a few beers from the fridge, and we relaxed there in the den and took in the tranquility. He was cleaning a pistol, a large one. I think it was a 45. The conversation was meandering along nicely, like any normal conversation would. He talked about his army days. He'd done 2 tours in Afghanistan, but hadn't seen much action. He was earnest about it, though, and hearing him tell the stories made me feel a certain reverence for him, as I did towards all soldiers who'd volunteered to put themselves in harm's way for the sake of our country. He finished cleaning the pistol, then he loaded it, then he set it on the end table next to his chair. It was about then that we heard a noise from outside, something indefinable but large sounding. He shushed me. Then he sort of smiled knowingly and picked up his pistol. A bear, he said. He probably smells our dinner, and he's come to see if there's anything for him.
A bear? A grizzly?
Doubtful. Probably a black bear. Grizzlies don't usually come this far down this time of year.
This far down? We didn't feel very far down to me.
But then again, I wasn't accustomed to this kind of outing. No reason not to take him at his word. And not that it really mattered to me. I supposed a black bear could eat me just as well as a grizzly could. It would just take him longer. Steve got up and made his way toward the front door, creeping along quietly. It sounded like the bear had made its way under the front porch. I could hear his claws scratching on the floorboards, and I thought I could hear him breathing, sniffing, even grunting. Without any warning at all, Steve let out with a loud yell as he banged the front door with an open palm. Like before, I flinched so hard I almost fell out of my chair. He opened the door and rushed down to the porch, which I thought was a terrible idea, though it was probably true that an unarmed bear was less threatening than a Taliban soldier. And then he fired 7 shots into the air.
"Get out of here, you crusty bastard!" he yelled.
And then he came back in and closed the door. He sort of paused when he'd finally caught my eye, realizing that he'd scared me again.
Sorry, Jake. Didn't mean to frighten you.
I know. I actually felt a little ashamed. I need to grow up here. He sort of laughed and retook his seat.
Good thing the girls aren't here. If they were, we'd probably be packing up and heading back to town.
No shit. Especially Amber. She can be pretty freaky sometimes. I could feel the mood change instantly, like the air pressure in the room had dropped.
What do you mean?
He asked.
Freaky.
You know, just freaky. She scares easy. He still had the pistol in his lap. I wished he'd put it away, like back in the gun safe where he'd put the rifles.
On the other hand, there was a bear out there.
What do you think she's afraid of?
He asked, all traces of mirth having left his voice.
I don't think she's afraid of anything in particular. She's just who she is. She scares easy.
For that matter, so does Carrie. I don't know why I singled out Amber.
Me neither.
He sort of cocked his head to the side.
Are you sure y'all didn't date? You and Amber?
Of course I'm sure.
Because it seems to me like maybe y'all did.
This was bizarre. And it was starting to become uncomfortable. Where was all this crap coming from, anyway? Of course, there'd been that time I'd been in the hot tub with Carrie and Amber back in the early days. We'd all been drinking and things have sort of gotten out of hand, but that hadn't lasted. After a few months, the three of us had decided that it probably wasn't a good idea for any of us to continue down that path. And besides, I'd never been with Amber back then by herself. It had always been the three of us. Well, except for a few times. Amber wouldn't have told anyone about those encounters, though. She wouldn't have wanted her sister to know. As far as that went, we had all agreed to keep our time as a threesome to ourselves. I couldn't imagine Amber telling someone she was dating, least of all the man she was going to marry, that she used to have sex with her sister and her sister's boyfriend. She wouldn't do that. Would she? She knew it would hurt Carrie if she did. And as to the four of us, it would have made it terribly uncomfortable, especially for Steve. Surely she hadn't done something so stupid. Surely he didn't know.
What are you doing with my wife, Jake?
Good Lord. That was more than just offensive, as he sat there staring at me with a pistol in his lap. It was menacing.
I don't know where this is coming from, Steve. But Carrie and I love each other. Carrie and Amber love each other. Why do you think any of us would do anything to hurt the others?
He didn't say a word. He just sat there, eyes narrowed, staring at me. Finally, he sort of grunted, and then he reached to the box of 45 shells and reloaded the two spent chambers in the pistol cylinder. The only sounds in the room were the occasional pop from the fire and the faint ticking of the mantel clock, which was partially hidden beneath the beard of a mounted bison head.
Well, he began as he stood. I'm going to bed. You should probably try to get some sleep yourself. We need to head for the blind about an hour before sunup.
Swear to God, getting to the blind on time was about the last thing in my mind just then. I was beginning to think that old Steve was a little imbalanced, and it was plain as day he had a bone to pick with me. Still, I couldn't imagine he knew anything about me and Amber. It was clear he was suspected, but surely that was due to some insecurity he had about himself, or about his own relationship with her. Surely she hadn't said anything to him. Surely not. I only sat up a few more minutes, thinking about everything that had transpired over the course of the afternoon and evening, considering whether or not I demanded that he take me home in the morning, as opposed to trudging through the snowy wilderness with him to a hunting blind. By that point, I couldn't imagine staying. Given everything that he'd gone on, it would have been foolish to stay. My biggest concern, as I went to bed, was whether he would agree to take me back. The mattress on my little twin bed was hard and lumpy. My guess was it hadn't been changed out in decades. At any rate, it did little to help me sleep, which was going to be hard enough considering that Steve was in the next room with a loaded pistol. I'd actually had the thought that I should get one of those rifles and keep it in bed with me, just in case. But he'd locked them up, which, at the time, I thought a responsible thing to do. There were knives in the kitchen, but they would obviously be of little use in a gunfight. Bottom line, this was going to be a long night. At least I was warm. Sometime later, I'm not sure how long, I'd begun to drift. I wasn't fully asleep, though, and suddenly I began to recognize the feeling that I wasn't alone, that I was being watched. My eyes flew open, but it was total darkness. I lay there, still and quiet, the hairs raised on my neck, listening. And pretty soon, I heard it, breathing, right next to my bed.
I fumbled at my phone in a rush and finally managed to turn its light on. Sure enough, there stood Steve, right next to me, still holding the pistol. "What the fuck?" I managed, flinching away from him. "What are you doing?" He didn't answer me. He just stood there with the pistol hanging towards the floor from his right arm. It was still warm in my room, but suddenly I felt cold, like a sheet of ice had just been dragged across me from the inside. The moment was completely surreal, but in it I began to know real fear. This man was crazy. He was thinking about whether or not he should kill me, and I was completely defenseless. "What's wrong?" I asked, trying to start some sort of conversation. "Is there something wrong? Did the bear come back?" "You fucked my wife, didn't you?" That wasn't exactly the conversation I'd had in mind. At least it wasn't the one I'd hoped for. Still, it was better if I kept him talking. "I can't imagine why you'd think that. You had your little cock in her. You know what she's like, don't you?" "Steve, I don't know who you've been talking to." "You're still fucking her, aren't you?" He'd said that in a whisper, more like he'd been talking to himself. I don't know why, but that was even more menacing. "Why do you think you have to have both of them? One ain't enough. Aren't they pretty much the same? Or maybe that's it. Maybe you think they are the same, and you're entitled to have whichever one of them you choose." This was like a nightmare. I couldn't believe I'd managed to get myself into this situation, that I'd allowed Carrie to get me into it. But I had. I started to say something else, anything, but before I managed another word, he raised the pistol and pointed it directly at my forehead, not more than an inch from my skin. "No!" I screamed. "Wait, wait, wait, wait! Was that my voice? Steve, wait! Shut the fuck up, you piece of shit, before I splatter your brains all over the wall." I did as told, the best I could, anyway. By then, I was almost whimpering, blubbering even. I was trying to hold it in, but failing miserably. At first, every thought in my mind merged into a great ball of white noise, one where language didn't exist. But then the noise began to abate in favor of distant words. Words like terror and survival and mercy and guilt. "When was the last time you were with my wife?" He seemed inordinately calm. Maybe because he was a soldier. "Did you suck her tits? Did she suck your cock?" He couldn't know. He couldn't know. I kept telling myself over and over. We'd been too careful. He couldn't know. Surely, to God, she wouldn't tell. Even if she didn't care about hurting Steve, surely she wouldn't risk hurting Carrie. "I swear to God, Steve, I don't know what you're talking about." I was all but sobbing by then, and my voice was barely more than a squeak. "Please, please don't kill me. Please." He almost laughed. "Good Lord, you're pathetic. I tell you what, Amber ought to be ashamed to let a little pussy like you put his cock in her. You really do need to grow a pair. Please, please." "Please what? Please put you out of your misery? I can do that." Without even waiting a beat for dramatic effect, he squeezed the trigger. I heard a solid slap of metal on metal, and then I screamed. It took me a second or two to comprehend that the chamber had been empty. "Good grief, boy," he said with a mocking sarcasm. "You need to change your diaper." He laughed and then added, "You didn't think I'd really shoot you, did you?" He laughed again, then he started out the room. He stopped in the doorway and turned back to face me, though his seriousness returned and said, "If you're still here in the morning, I think I will kill you." With that, he disappeared into the darkness of the hallway. I collapsed into myself. The first thing I became aware of was that my body was covered with sweat, and I was shivering cold. The next thing, I'd pissed in my drawers. Normally, that would have been tremendously embarrassing, but there was nothing normal about what had just gone on. That son of a bitch was nuts, and I had to get the fuck out. He said he thought he'd kill me if I was still there in the morning. I didn't know much, but I knew I wasn't sticking around to give him the opportunity. I got dressed as quickly as I could, fumbling at the button and zipper on my jeans. My fingers felt as thick as sausages. My heavy coat was in the den, along with the rest of my stuff. But there was no way in hell I was risking going out there. I'd gladly sacrifice all that crap to the greater good, which was making sure I made it out of the cabin alive. I put my phone, which had no reception just then, in one pocket and my wallet in the other. Then I opened the window, quiet as I could, and crawled outside. The window was 6 or 7 feet from the ground, and I managed to stumble my way out of it. Quite painfully, actually, but that didn't matter. Steve's window was just a few feet from mine, so I was pretty sure he would have heard me fall. I scrambled to my feet and took off running. I thought about heading down the road, but that would obviously make me easy to find, so I headed for the woods instead. I knew there was at least one bear in the general vicinity, but somehow that seemed less of a threat. At least there was a moon. That, coupled with the ambient light reflecting from the snow, allowed me to see well enough. I didn't stop running until I made it to the edge of the woods, and then I crouched down behind a tree and looked back toward the cabin. At first, there was nothing. No sounds, no sights of movement. But that changed pretty quickly. The front door flew open, and out came Steve, flashlight in hand, and his .45 in the other. He ran off the porch, and then he stopped so he could shine his light across the area. I ducked behind my tree, best I could, anyway, and tried to make myself small. The beam of light passed by me once, twice, and then a third time. Then Steve called out to me.
Jake! Jake! You know there's a bear out there. It ain't safe.
I couldn't wait any longer. I'd lost my nerve. I took off into the woods like a scared rabbit, not being careful about how much noise I was making. It didn't take long for the beam of light to refocus in my area, which only motivated me to run faster.
Jake, wait. You're gonna get lost. There's a bear.
I had the presence of mind to change direction to try to avoid the beam. I ran until my lungs started burning, and then I hid behind the roots of a large tree that had fallen over. I could see the beam of light shining through the trees to my right. Maybe I'd thrown him off my trail.
Jake, come back. It's too cold out here. You're gonna freeze to death.
The beam of light kept moving through the forest. He hadn't turned where I'd turned. He kept going straight and was headed past me. Speaking of my trail, though, I felt certain he'd figure out sooner or later that all he had to do was double back and find my tracks in the snow, and they'd lead him right to me. I couldn't stay where I was. I had to move.
Jake, I'm sorry, Jake. I was just teasing. You know I wouldn't shoot you.
I couldn't just take off, though. I had to be calculated. I had to make sure I was staying clear of him, but I had to work my way back towards the road. Otherwise, I could get lost, and getting lost could prove just as deadly as staying put.
Jake!
I heard him calling to me yet again, but then there was silence, and then came another yell, but with a different sense of urgency.
Get out of here! You get!
His words were followed by 3 gunshots in quick succession.
Get! Fuck!
Then 2 more gunshots, then a growlish roar, like that of a bear, and then a scream. It was a blood-curdling scream, too, like nothing I'd ever heard. It made goose flesh rise up all over my body.
Jake!
I'd never heard my name like that before, either. And frankly, I hoped I never would again. It was ghoulish, like Satan himself was ripping Steve's soul from his body. I heard another growl, and then another scream. And finally, a scream that cut off right in the middle, like somebody had pulled its plug. I was mortified by it. Just like the rest of this evening had been, it was almost beyond belief. But I was virtually certain I'd just heard the demise of my brother-in-law. And in spite of everything he'd done, it was an awful thing to hear. In the moments that followed, I came to know true terror. I was afraid I was going to hear Steve call for me again in some half-dead, terror-filled plea for help. He never did, though. Nor did I hear any more comment from the bear, assuming that's what it had been. And, of course, I was afraid that the bear was going to come for me next, and I didn't have any way to defend myself. Steve had a gun. Lots of good it had done him. What chance would I have without any weapon at all? there weren't just bears in the forest, either. There were probably all manner of creatures that would do me in if given the chance. What was I going to do? What in the hell was I going to do? Before long, I started noticing how cold I was. I was bone cold, and I was shivering like crazy. I thought about going back to the cabin, but realized there was a chance Steve had only been wounded and had made it back to the cabin himself. I thought about getting up and moving to generate heat, but quickly dismissed that idea. I would be asking for death by predator if I showed myself any more than was absolutely necessary. Finally, and only after I'd come close to giving up, I thought about Eskimos. Eskimos. I spent the next few minutes building snow walls up to the sides of the fallen tree trunk and its roots, building a space barely big enough for me to fit inside. Once I'd slid myself in, I built up the snow across the opening as high as I could, and then I wrapped myself up tight and waited. I waited for some animal to find me, or for Steve to call to me with some wraith-like voice, or for the sun to come up. By then, I had come to realize that I was definitely not the master of my fate. Surprisingly, I managed to fall asleep. I spent the rest of the night drifting in and out of consciousness, fighting to go back under every time I came to. The night was long and desperate, but finally, I woke up and found sunlight creeping in around the edge of my little cocoon. I was excited, almost deliriously thankful, and I burst through the side of my fortress and stood up in the new day. It was amazing how warm I'd stayed. It was almost counterintuitive, like a shelter made of snow could keep me warm, but it had. Again, I thought about going back to the cabin, maybe finding the keys to Steve's trunk so I could drive off the mountain. But just like last night, I recognized the possibility that I might run into Steve. I knew the road was to my right, so I decided to head into that direction. I came across a pretty gruesome sight just a few hundred yards along the way, though, and it almost made me change direction. There was an area, maybe 8 or 10 feet in diameter, where the snow was spattered with what I thought was blood. Frozen blood. I started to give the area a wide berth, but something caught my eye from its middle. I walked to it, and sure enough, it was Steve's gun. There were also several large pools of frozen blood next to it. If the body was Steve's, I didn't see how he could still be alive. There was too much of it. Then, I noticed a trail of blood-tinted snow leaving the area, as though something had been dragged away. The trail grew fainter and fainter, and disappeared altogether, maybe 30 feet from where I was standing. I shivered at the thought of what had gone on there last night, but it was clear that I couldn't be deterred. I had to find my way back to the road, and then, somehow, to safety. I reached down and picked up Steve's pistol. I remembered hearing 5 shots last night, which meant there should have been 1 unspent bullet left. I flicked out the cylinder and dumped the casings into my hand. Sure enough, there was 1 unspent bullet. I put it back in the cylinder and closed it so that the bullet would be ready to fire. And then I started walking. It didn't take long, maybe 1/2 hour, to make my way to the road. I was elated, to say the least. I hadn't been paying that close of attention when we'd driven up yesterday, but it seemed like it had been 4 or 5 miles at least from the last sign of humanity to the cabin. I was starting to feel warm as the sun rose higher, so I unzipped my jacket and started walking down the road. I checked my phone for service intermittently, and about 1 hour later, found that I finally had it. I tried to call Carrie first, but she didn't answer. I left her a voicemail explaining to call as soon as she could, that it was an emergency, but didn't give any details. This wasn't the sort of thing you left in a message. Next, I called 911, and after a few minutes of explaining, the operator felt comfortable that she understood where I was, so she sent someone my way. "It shouldn't take long," she said. "Just stay on the road so they could find me. Assuming nothing else went awry, that should be easy enough to accomplish." So I kept walking, right down the center of the road. Since the apex of the crisis appeared to be behind me, and survival seemed more certain, I began thinking about what had transpired the night before. It had all started with Amber, with Steve essentially accusing me of having an affair with his wife. And he hadn't thought it was something past, but something present. He thought I was fucking his wife currently. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out why he'd think that. He certainly hadn't heard anything from me, and I couldn't imagine a scenario that would have led Amber to tell him anything. Like I said, we'd been extremely careful, only meeting in times and places when and where we were as close to certain as possible that we wouldn't be found out. It would have almost been miraculous had either Steve or Carrie caught us, which got me to wondering. Maybe Amber had given something away. Maybe she'd gotten drunk and let something slip. Maybe she'd accidentally called him by my name when they'd been together. That was hard for me to believe, though, given what was at stake, her sister's love. Surely she wouldn't have been so reckless. Steve wasn't as close to Amber as Carrie was, nor was he as sharp as Carrie. That's when it occurred to me. What if Carrie had figured it out? She was closer to Amber than anyone, and to me, too, for that matter. What if it had been impossible for Amber to keep it from her? Or what if she confronted Amber outright and Amber hadn't been able to lie? What if Carrie knew and she'd told Steve? Was it even possible? Would my Carrie do that? Would she prime Steve and then send me up a mountain with him? Carrie knew I didn't like Steve that much, and she knew I didn't like to hunt. Yet she'd been the one who set this whole thing up. She'd been the one who encouraged me to come. Encouraged? Hell, now that I thought about it, she'd insisted that I come. No two ways about it. She'd wanted me on that mountain, and she'd stayed after me until I'd agreed to it. Would she do that? Would my wife, the woman who's supposed to love me unconditionally, actually do that to me? First I heard it, and then I saw the SUV coming towards me from the distance. Soon enough, I could see the lights on the vehicle's roof. It was my would-be rescuers. I looked down at my phone. Carrie still hadn't called me back. Why wouldn't she have called me back? I stepped in the road and watched the SUV approach, felt the weight of the pistol in my hand, and wondered what the fuck was coming next.